he was, that Krishna was going to kill him. He was a tyrant. He was mean to his people. So he ended up slaughtering thousands of children to try and prevent his own murder by Krishna. But the parents knew what was going on, and they took him to a farm where he was raised as a sheep herder. And the legends of Krishna's childhood and youth describe him as a cow herder. He was mischievous, but at the same time, he was a protector of the people in the little village where he was growing up. Apparently, he was a very handsome young man, was very charismatic. He attracted a lot of the young girls, and his favorite, it was the name of Radha, R-A-D-H-A, and became his wife. And it's interesting, we weren't able to find out why, but apparently if one looks at a lot of pictures of Krishna, his skin tone is kind of a bluish black color, and we weren't able to really find out why, if there's any significance to that. So during the discussion, if anybody is aware, we'd like to find that out. Other legends describe him as an enchanter, a playful lover, and we mentioned Radha is his favorite. These metaphor-filled love stories are known as the Rasa Lila and were romanticized in poetry, and Krishna's childhood illustrates the Hindu concept where all the games that the children play, they're not for competition, but for fun and exercise. And his life is like a double life. He was considered both a god, but in mortal form at the same time. And he was a prince, but he was born as a prince, but disguised as a commoner. The earliest writings regarding Krishna as a personality is in the Mahabharata, which, as we said, depicts Krishna as the incarnation of Vishnu. And he's central to many of the main stories in the Bhagavad Gita. And as we know, Arjuna was considered to be his best friend. And no matter whatever happened with Krishna, Arjuna always stayed by his side. And the origin of Krishna is very similar to that of Jesus, as we said, born of a virgin birth. And he was, as Jesus was born and raised in a barn, a stable kind of a thing, so did Krishna grow up on a farm. And their names, in many ways we see Krishna's name spelled C-H rather than K, which follows a lot with the Christos principle. So that will actually state that he is of a godlike quality. So he was born in a town called Mathura. They don't know exactly when, but it's looked at as being 6,877 years ago. And he died, it was almost like an accident. he was sleeping on the ground in the woods, and a hunter came along, thought he was a deer, and shot him, and it was a fatal injury. But again, like Christ, he was still alive when the hunter found him, and the hunter asked for forgiveness, which Krishna does. And it says the Bhagavad Purana in book 11 states that after his death, Krishna returns to his transcendent abode directly because of his yogic concentration, which we will get to. And to end, we would just like to, there's one other quote from the Bhagavad Gita. Both I and thou have passed through many births, O harasser of thy foes. Mine are known unto me, but thou knowest not of thine. Even though myself, unborn of changeless essence, and the Lord of all existence, yet in presiding over nature which is mine, I am born, but through my own Maya, the mystic power of self-ideation, the eternal thought in the eternal mind. I produce myself among creatures, O son of Bharata, whenever there is a decline of virtue and an insurrection of vice and injustice in the world, and thus I incarnate from age to age for the preservation of the just, the destruction of the wicked, and the establishment of righteousness.
Here we have a historical figure, but an idea that goes beyond that. We gave a description of the Kali Yuga, and it's dark with horrors. Well, it's always said that the cycle doesn't make us, we make the cycle. So we are just being told what influences will be amongst us, and that the way of combating it is with the proper attitude of mind, the proper perspective on life. And it begins with, I am not this body. I'm much more than that. And that which is indestructible, eternal, boundless, and immutable. That I am. But what has happened is that we have become encased in matter, and we have become blind to our spiritual reality of who we truly are. And the purpose of Krishna was to awaken us during this Kali Yuga, that there is a spiritual essence, and we can find it within ourselves. And by our actions, by Krishna says, by the conscious control of one's actions, restraining one of oneself for that which is higher, the sacrifice, Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita expresses the idea of selflessness, but also action. But works without knowledge are not productive. So our knowledge is of our true nature. And the Gita lays it out very succinctly in the Sankhya doctrine, it's called, but it's the speculative science. of theosophy. But then Krishna begins, or Arjuna and Krishna begin a conversation about how do you live in this world without creating more disharmony? How can you free yourself from this world, especially in this Kali Yuga? How can you do that? And that is what the Gita is about. Non-attachment. Not looking for the results of your labor. Like sacrificing it up to your higher nature or to that which you understand. Your family, whatever. That that life is not lived alone. That we're a unity, a oneness. We see disparaging or differences of character everywhere. But we are all one, even with the lower kingdoms. Our bodies are made up of those lower kingdoms. So we have become the stewards of those kingdoms. So the Gita gives us a place to turn and to rekindle that flame of spiritual understanding. But this is done through a constant practice, a constantly of turning the mind inward to these ideas. It's a constant labor and of attention and resolve that the effort that is put forth during this dark age bears forth fruit of an infinite manner in lives to come and for the world around us. Because the spirituality is forgotten. And it's being trampled and hidden. But we can be a light unto the world. You know, again, the cycle doesn't make us. We make the cycle. So, we gave you a bird's eye view of some, you know, of this topic. But if you have questions, we would love to entertain them. Yes.
As was mentioned in the Mahabharata, Krishna is portrayed as a great warrior, and the two factions are trying to convince him to be on their side, because whoever side Krishna is on will be victorious. He's particularly a great warrior, expert in all weapons. So, and even in the Bhagavad Gita, it says, an unsought fight, which glory, fortune favored soldiers obtain. So what is this idea of being the warrior soul, have to do with our age? What does it tell us about how we need to act in it as warriors in this age?
We wonder, because it's a psychological reading, the Bhagavad Gita, as well, I mean, one can take it literally. The other, we know Mr. Judge, wanted it to also be looked at as a psychological study of the higher and the lower self. So we think the whole idea of being a warrior has to do with fight, you know, keeping a vigil, keeping a constant fight between the higher and the lower, the higher trying to fight off you know, since we're looking at the idea of Kali Yuga, there's materialism, there's self-centeredness, there's the sin of separateness. So there's a huge battle that we're fighting now in this age, and we have to keep aware, but at the same time to keep ourselves centered and to continue to look at universal brotherhood, helping other people with their fight as well. So we think with this, with the title of it being this age, with the Kali Yuga, we need to keep a constant vigil and try and fight our passions and desires, our lower senses, and to be concentrated on that.
I think it alludes to the fact that if you want this knowledge, you have to pursue it. You have to actively pursue it. You cannot passively sit here and absorb without an effort, without a desire to know the truth. So, in this age of Kali Yuga, passivity is very rampant. So, our effort is to become active. And this is mental devotion. Keep these ideas in your head and just discuss with yourself. Just remind yourself you're not these bodies. We're not. Yes?
Well, if this is our dharma, our natural duty, why? What's our motive? What kind of focus would Krishna have us bring to this process?
Selflessness. Action. We are compelled to work. We're compelled to act. We're just compelled. So we have to adjust our moral code and become selfless. That's what he's trying to tell us. How do you do that intelligently? To benefit all? You know, it's a process. No one has the answer for us. We have to go along and try these things and determine for ourselves if that is the answer. Self-induced and self-devised means.
And he also states that when we're doing our duty, to do it as it comes to us and not to expect anything in return from doing that duty. That we shouldn't be helping somebody else because we want them to think that we're a wonderful person. We should help that person because that person needs to be helped. So whatever our duty is, when it comes to us, we do it without expectation. And karmically, we should do that with the right motive, to do it because it has to be done and not because we want anything out of it. Because karmically, we know thoughts are things. So if we're thinking with the right motive, then it will work better, not only for us, and we shouldn't do it with the right motive because we want a better karmic outcome. You know, it's kind of a, you know, vicious cycle. But yeah, we should do it without any expectation.
Yeah, be kind.
Yes.
Usually when we read that first chapter of the Bhagavad Gita about the despondency of Arjuna, we take it from the psychological point of view and look at the kurus as representing our lower nature. But considering our talk today, the kurus could really represent the Kali Yuga, all the horrors of it, all the materialism, all the selfishness, all the sensuality. And we are, like Arjuna, children of the age. And we have many friends and family who are very much influenced. So all that happens to Arjuna, his meeting Krishna and the battle and the initial message, the encouragement to get Arjuna out of that dejection and depression, you think, could be addressed to us. How much we can be overwhelmed and depressed and dejected by the age we're in.
Well, it's very true. It's great effort to come here sometimes every week. Week in and week out, year in and year out. Only to keep these rooms open and keep these ideas alive. That's all. Or we can talk freely about them and we can discuss them. And so that it would be a benefit to the neighborhood.
And the materialism of the day, of this age, can be so overwhelming. And it's not just that people are buying lots of things, but we can also look at materialism as people almost like using each other as, how can we say it? But it materially, we can use each other, you know, for whatever good we can get out of somebody. And it can be very overwhelming. It can be very depressing now. And we have these ideas to help us to get over that. And, you know, by reading the Bhagavad Gita and knowing what Krishna says about universal brotherhood, it can be very supportive and give us a new perspective on things.
You're invited to become a pilgrim. You know, Krishna's inviting you, and so is Arjuna. Come on, I got a little journey that you can go on. Let me describe it to you. And he does. The Gita is a description of that world that can be. But it's the ideas that we hold to be true that hold us back, that are our stumbling blocks. In the back.
As far as Krishna's color goes, in Hinduism, blue represents the infinite and the immeasurable, sort of like a clear blue sunny sky. It seems infinite and immeasurable, and that's why blue is attributed to be his color, symbolic.
Oh. Thank you.
Also, he had a lot of blue in his aura. I did some research.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah.
People who were psychic saw a lot of blue in his aura.
Oh, okay. Thank you. Yes.
And we live in the city of brotherly love. And all over the city, especially in Fairmount Park, and even down here in Logan Circle, there are created symbols which speak loud. And even as children, you know, what does that mean, beautiful dreamer, awaken to me? And what does it mean, pay attention? We always use that. What is it that I have to watch out for? And here we get the idea when we say brotherly love. Love ye one another as I have loved thee. The symbolism and the images that are provided for us help us to grasp the Bhagavad Gita and all the other philosophical texts which point at what is the aim and purpose of life. What is the aim and purpose of all this natural beauty around us? It's talking, it's silent talk, but what does it mean when we look at a statue, beautiful dream awakened, the Statue of Liberty in New York Harbor?
Well, one of the things that was mentioned in the comment was about what do we have to look out for? And We think that there are quite a few things that we have to be aware of. And one is because of the materialism of the age and the fact that we can be, you know, the sin of separateness. We do need to be on guard of being distracted from keeping a watch within, of looking within, thou art Buddha. So rather than looking at everything that's going on outwardly, whether it's good or bad, we have to keep an eye on continually looking at life from a spiritual perspective.
And we have a conversation in the Gita. It's a conversation between your higher self and your lower self, your body. They're having it right before us. It's the battle that goes on within every human being. So this journey that we are all on can be brought to our consciousness so that we are consciously living in the moment, but in the reality of the moment, not in what has become to us as reality.
Yes.
What does it mean? Wake up and live. What is the purpose? What for? Why are we here at all? And why the different levels of understanding? From, well, we could be poetic and say from a raindrop to the Rocky Mountain, but let's be, what is our aim and purpose?
Why do we ask why? We want to know. We want to know. It's just a intrinsic idea that there is something more than what we are. Something beyond what we can truly comprehend. You know, something that is eternal, boundless, immutable, and omnipresent. What is that? Space. One must fill one's mind with these ideas just for consideration that we are really a unity, a oneness. What one does affects the other.
And we can also say that the purpose is for the advancement of soul. And we can do this by helping others, by being aware of what our duty is, doing it unconditionally. But it is for the advancement and progression and ultimate return to the that great soul, that being that's out there. We used the wrong term, beingness rather than being.
But we are eternal beings.
Yeah.
All of us are eternal.
Yes.
Well, justifiably, the negative aspects of the Kali Yuga have been spoken of, but it is also said to be a great age of opportunity where cause follows effect very rapidly. It's a fast-moving age, and that an individual dedicated to the improvement of the race can accomplish much more in that time than in a slower-moving age. And so we're just wondering, the very end of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna tells Arjuna, after giving all the instruction, act as seemeth best unto thee. What does that have to do? What does that last bit of coaching have to do with how we find ourselves in this age, the way it is?
Well, we know that Krishna repeated himself many times to Arjuna. Arjuna kept asking the same questions over and over. So finally, we're thinking that maybe Arjuna finally got it. And so when he says, act as seemeth best unto thee, we think he's telling him, use your, you know, it's like your buddhi, your intuition. Use that. You've had all these teachings. You know what you're supposed to do. So use your intuition and act as if it, and act according to that.
It's, well, yes.
Well, then experience must be the best teacher. Why?
So why is experience the best teacher? Well, this is how we develop our intuition, is by experiencing things and by thinking, well, you know, maybe I'll just, you know, rather than plan things, and I'll just go with my intuition and see if this works out. And one has to learn from your mistakes, and that's how your intuition is developed, is by learning by your mistakes and thinking, oh, well, maybe I better think a different way in the future. So it's, experience is how one develops your intuition.
Test, check, and verify. Yeah.
There was a hand in the back.
Well, a statement was made that perhaps Arjuna got it at the end of the Bhagavad Gita, but then there's the Anugita. Doesn't he say?
It starts over again.
What was that you told me? Basically, it needs a refresher. So we all do need to be constantly inculcated and educated, because it's the knowledge is really within us. But we need to hear from without first, most of us anyway,
I think. But we think hearing it from without is just a reminder that where it exists, there's what? The things that come to us in life are things that we put there. So, you know, during this age, you know, the light of spirituality has to be cultivated. And then it being thus cultivated, it can bring forth great benefit during this dark age.
We think, we thought also that that last statement, act as seemeth best unto thee, stresses the importance that in this cycle, where everything's upside down and the leaders are corrupt and all that, that we have to be our own authority. How does that fit into this age, being our own authority? Why is that so important?
Well, we think the basis of all of these studies is to be our own authority. We need to, we hear these teachings, and they may make a great deal of sense. Well, how do we apply them? There becomes the task. You know, that we have to be reminded constantly. That's another reason why we come here. We have to remind ourselves that what we get caught up all week long is not real. It's just a means to an end. So, you know, it's a shift in consciousness from a material world into a spiritual world.
And the idea that was stated earlier about the Kali Yuga, that we can actually progress quicker. So we need to be aware, as was said, that things are going to come up to try and distract us. But if we use our intuition and realize that, you know, what these distractions are, they're nothing. They don't mean anything. But we have the opportunity to go above and beyond what is distracting us, using our intuition, realizing that everyone else is a spiritual being. Karmically, we're all on our own path, and just doing what has to be done with the right motive.
Cast no one out of your heart. Mm-hmm. Be kind. Be brotherly. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. It's all expressions of these teachings of Krishna, and, you know, and these stories of Arjuna and Krishna. Our spiritual journey is always assisted by higher beings that have traveled this path before, and they're always coming forth with, it's really the same image, but if in different ages it takes on different kinds of personalities, but it's for the benefit of mankind, to set him free, that he is the creator of the universe. And what we see are the reflections of where we have been and what we have been.
Yes.
The word independent devotion should be clear to us. But we hear so much noise out there, we can't hear ourselves think. Mm-hmm. Independent devotion is the fact that we got to put plugs, so to speak, in our ears. And if you can see without opening your eyes, that's a term for look within yourself rather than without, and discover what the Declaration of Independence itself infers. And by comparing back and forth, we learn to do our own thinking rather than letting outside think for us.
Well, the idea of independent devotion is, I mean, it goes along with the idea of karma, because what we put into it, into the studying of these ideas and being involved, will help us to progress, you know, in this age where we can progress quicker, but we have to do it ourselves. The motivation has to come from within. We can certainly discuss these ideas and get a better handle on things with other people, but it is on us when we walk out that front door, when we go home, to study on our own, to meditate, to help others. And definitely, I mean, it's easy to do it when we're in here with other like-minded souls, but we have the opportunities when we leave here to put these ideas into action.
Do it as seemed best unto you. So what is the best that we know? What have we been told? Or what have we seen? That to attain something, it takes discipline. It takes discipline. And devotion takes devotion. So to do anything, we have to, first of all, have the desire. We have to have the desire to be, or to live amongst those who know more than we do in this age, and to make it a better age to come, and to help with the suffering that is manifested on this globe. You know, as thinkers, we have been exposed to reality in such a different way We know instantly of our own brutality. It seems that that's what the world is interested in. But it doesn't go unnoticed. So apparently the world needs to have a change of attitude. And that's what theosophy is here to give them, a change in attitude. Yes?
Yes, independent, meaning that, ouch, that hurt. I won't do it that way again. And why? What does it mean, brotherhood? And we learn. And we do it independently from within, without, based on what we receive from without, within. Harmony is the result. And when we apply it that way, we heard nature say, oh, such a one is my most beloved. So we use these poetic terms to find some, whatever way we think we can do it. And it helps us. The Gita, the voice of the all are songs.
Well, we are being tested. We're being tested to live this life, to live a life in spirit. We're being tested. And that it's easy to point the finger and see, well, look at that. We can't. We have to go, well, look at that. And the effort has to be our own.
Mm-hmm.
Just because someone else is not doing it, we have to do what seems best. We have this knowledge now, so what are you going to do with it? What do you know? We're going to do what seems best unto us. Otherwise, you know, we wasted this knowledge. But the fact that you have this knowledge, or we have it, is that we've wanted it. We wanted to know the answers to why all this mess is here. And it's the Gita says, well, this is why. You just change your attitude, and the world will change.
And the idea of independent devotion is so different from the other religions where there's somebody, you know, a priest or an imam or whatever is up there telling you what it is that you need to believe. We are all students. We are all volunteers that come up on this platform, but it is up to you to check, test, and verify these ideas to see if it fits into your way of thinking. But it has to come from within. Nobody can tell you what to believe. You can be given suggestions as to why these things work, but it's up to you for yourself to determine if it's right for you. Yes.
In the in the reading of the description of the Kali Yuga, it said that the desires or lust was the foremost driving power of our age. And it's interesting that in one of the places in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna describes how this lust, this passion, rules everything in us, our senses, our intellect, even our intuition, and how we can deal with it. And if we think, as we see next week, all the other sages, Buddha, try to teach us how to deal with desire, and Jesus, they all pick up on this theme of the importance of how to manage our passions and desires, what to do with them. That seems to be the keynote of the teaching of our age.
Yeah.
Yes, helping us to become self-reliant and consciously aware of our life and ways in which we can help.
Yeah.
You're done? All right, well, we have come to the end of our hour. It was good seeing everyone, but we remind you that all effort at this lodge is done on a voluntary contribution of time, service, and money. We consider ourselves a school, and you can help and you can enter it by volunteering. Meeting adjourned.